Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids.
Welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Kristen Friedman, and Kristen has been a longtime student. Maybe for like the last few years, she's basically went around to workshops, really all over the country and maybe Costa Rica and stuff like that. And I'm excited to have her on the podcast because, you know, she comes from a totally different perspective on a lot of the things that, you know, we usually address with the Heartbreak Kids. But she's definitely one of like the strong people in our community. Whether she believes that or not, that's a different story. But, you know, she's definitely like a kind of a big influence in our community. She posts a lot and she, you know, is very active on, you know, social media, and she practices at home, which is, I'm sure we're going to talk about today. But I'm excited to have you on the show. So thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's just get into it a little bit. Like, tell us a little bit about who you are. Where are you from?
I'm from Waynesboro, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's a little bitty town right on the Maryland line, right smack dab in the middle of the PA-Maryland border.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And have you always grown up there?
Yeah, I grew up in Wolfsville, Maryland, which is okay. An even smaller town, about 20 minutes away from there.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's where your parents are?
Yeah, they still live in the same house that I grew up in.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
And you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother and one sister, both younger. I'm the oldest.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you have four kids?
I have four kids.
Yeah. And so she's definitely like the mama of the group, you know, like four kids is pretty freaking amazing. You got to be a super strong mom in order to do that. And you have a job too. Like,
yes.
And you've got so much stuff going on. So I'm really excited to talk about you. I talk with you. So tell us a little bit about like high school, like how you fit in, like how you were as a kid and like, let's go from there.
I grew up in a small town and I didn't really have a lot of friends near me. So most of my social networking was at church.
Okay.
We were at church all the time. Sunday, we went twice, morning and evening.
Was
we were
your
hardcore.
Dad a pastor?
No.
Oh, man.
He was a deacon.
Okay.
I mean.
You guys are full-on believers.
Full-on. Full-on. And we would go on Wednesday nights as well.
Okay.
And then if they had any special event, we'd be there. So all of my friends and most of my social life was at church.
Okay.
School was super awkward for me.
Why?
I don't know. I just didn't know how to fit in, really. When I got to high school, I was in band. And the band community in my high school is not highly favored.
Why?
We just were the misfits. They called us band fags, as a matter of fact. Those were our names. Yeah, it was a little hardcore.
God.
Yeah. So, you know, being a band fag, you didn't really like make it on the social scene very much. So,
That's a ridiculous term.
Agreed, but that's what we were.
Wow. And so what instrument?
Flute.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you still play?
No, I have one. I have a flute still, but no, I don't play it.
It's in the trophy case.
Basically. My mom bought me a super nice flute when I was a senior in high school.
Okay.
And it's like silver plated and beautiful, and I'll probably always keep it.
Yeah,
but play it,
I'm good at playing the recorder, like Hot Cross Buns.
Oh, okay.
I'm really good at that.
Yeah,
I learned that in...
It's a special talent.
Fifth, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really. But okay, so you were part of the band. And so, I mean, did you do band in college?
No. I started out in community college because we did not have a lot of money. We're kind of too poor to be rich and too rich to be poor.
Okay.
So a lot of aid that I would normally get for college was not available.
Right.
And I was the first person in my family to really go through and try to achieve a 4-year degree.
Okay.
My dad got a 2-year degree. And so they didn't even know how to help me.
Wow.
I heavily relied on the counselors in my high school and the budgeting. I just couldn't start at university.
Yeah.
So I went to Hagerstown Community College.
Wow.
And I worked at the distance learning office there. And I met with the counselor to help figure out what classes I needed to take. I wanted to be a teacher.
Okay, that's cool.
And she told me that I needed to leave early. So I left the community college a half a year early
yeah.
because there was nothing else they could offer me.
Wow.
And I transferred to the University of Maryland College Park.
Okay.
And I was a nanny. That is how
Which is like kind of a perfect job for you.
Yes, but it was one of those jobs where I didn't realize what was happening. I didn't realize I was being taken advantage of by the family.
Okay.
And so I lived in their home.
Oh, geez.
And I got the kids up and ready for school every day and went to college, got them off the bus, did homework with them, and then also worked an evening job.
Yeah, that's a lot.
To pay for everything. And they didn't pay me. I was given room and board.
Wow.
Four.
That's crazy. Well, I mean, it's sort of like a au pair.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I wasn't paid for it. I was just given a room to stay in and food to eat.
Wow.
Looking back now, that's ridiculous. But at the time, coming from where I came from in the small town and not really knowing much, I thought it was a great deal. And I stayed there for a year and a half. And then my friend was like, hey, this is not a good deal. Like, you need to get out of here.
Right.
And so I finished my degree and I met my husband right before I graduated. And then I got my graduate degree because I hate school.
Yeah.
I knew I would never go back for my graduate degree. So I just stayed and got it in behavior disorders. So I have undergrad in special ed.
Yeah.
And I have graduate in behavior disorders.
This is why you're so patient?
Maybe. I don't know.
It's like you're, you know, a mom of four. You know, it's like you got to have like a massive amount of patience.
Yes.
And so like you have like the special aid training, like nurturing element of the mom. It's like, I don't know, it seems like perfect fit or whatever.
Yeah. I notice sometimes my husband and I affectionately call it my teacher voice.
Okay.
And it'll come out when like things are going crazy and I need to bring calm to a space. My teacher voice will come out.
Okay.
And it's almost like this soothing balm. Like, okay, let's get it together. Like, all right, one step at a time. Let's figure this out. And yeah, it does come in handy for parenting.
Yeah, for sure. Because I have zero patience and I'm always questioning whether or not I'm actually a good dad or not.
I mean,
it'll... like, I don't know. Like, I probably shouldn't have done that. I say a lot of apologies.
As long as you apologize, I mean, it's part of the process.
You know what? It's given me an appreciation. I know this is like a side note, but it's given me an appreciation for like, you know, I didn't think I had like the best childhood. At certain points I had the best, like an awesome childhood, but then at certain points I didn't as well. And so, and I would give my dad like a hard time. And, you know, like right now, currently being a dad, I'm like, oh, yeah, like he was just trying to figure it out, too.
Yeah.
Like he didn't know.
Yeah.
And so it's given me a lot of compassion around like the fact of like, oh, yeah, like, you know, my dad's human as well. My mom's a human as well. It's like they make mistakes. No one's given the guide of like, right. Here's how to parent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've had to do the same process with my mom.
Really?
Yeah. The way she grew up was deplorable. And, her and my father made pretty much a pact to bring us up differently.
Yeah.
And she was abused and it was not a good thing when she was growing up. And so when we were growing up, she did 150,000% better than how she was growing up. But there was still a detachment. Mm. There was still a level of involvement that we never were able to come to with my mom. And there were points in our upbringing where big things happened, like my grandparents got divorced and
right.
she dealt with like injuries and things like that, where that detachment became even bigger.
Wow.
And so as I became an adult, I realized I harbored a lot of bitterness toward my mother.
Yeah.
And it honestly wasn't until about 10 years ago that I actually forgave her.
Wow.
And that was quite a process. But yes, I completely understand what you're saying. Like, everybody's just trying to do the best they can.
Yeah.
And that's really hard.
It is hard, especially when there's trauma and there's struggles and there's detachment and all of these other things. It's super difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in this nanny thing and you get out of it. You know, you got these two degrees. Like, what do you do from there? You get married?
I got married.
Okay.
Yes, I have an amazing husband. We've been married for 17 years.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I met Andy in Costa Rica, and yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Ninja warrior.
Ninja
sure.
warrior. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Maybe I'll do a podcast with him, too.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Pretty intense. But he was practicing with us. It was pretty awesome. He's a great guy. So, You got married and then like, did you start having kids right away?
No, I taught in Howard County Public Schools.
Okay.
I was a hub teacher for kids with emotional disturbance. That's the label.
Okay.
That's the state label for them. Isn't that terrible? But anyway, if they could not perform well in their homeschool, they were bused to me and I would evaluate whether or not they needed to have services and be sent back to their homeschool or if they needed a more restrictive placement and regular school was not a good option
for
them.
Yeah, of course.
So I loved it.
You did?
Yeah, the first year.
And how many years did you do it?
Two.
Okay.
But the first year I had kids that really did struggle with emotional disturbance. Like they had anxiety and suicidal tendencies and depression and things that I was trained to deal with. And right. I helped them and I would like do things out of the box because they don't have learning disabilities. They suffer with mental health.
Of course.
So yeah. I would steal things from different departments of the school because they didn't need the dumbed down books.
Right.
And my kids performed way better than any of the other emotional disturbance programs in this in the county. And they gave me an award for it. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I'm just teaching them. Like, what are you... And so the second year didn't go as well because they gave me actual behavior problems. And I'm like, this is not what my degree is. And not this. But it was a different...
You got out of it after that.
I got pregnant. And then we had decided when we got married that once I started having kids, I wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But I still worked anyway. Yeah. I left Howard County, but then I was an administrator and a teacher at a parochial school.
Okay.
Where we went to church in Laurel.
So. Yeah. That's, it's interesting too, because like me and Jess, after like our second baby, we were like, yeah, she's not going to work anymore. But I mean, Jess reached a spot where she was like, I kind of want to talk to adults again.
Yes. You know,
which is a real thing.
It is totally a real thing.
Yeah. And so like I supported her with that. She's like working on some projects or whatever. Not full time or anything like that, but she gets to talk to like adults and that's like kind of changed like her whole well-being as a result of like not talking gibberish to, you know, to toddlers or whatever. So
yeah
it's interesting. So let's shift gears like into yoga. Like how did that even enter the picture? I mean, is it even okay for like someone who is as deeply involved in church to do in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania to do yoga?
I was actually invited by another Christian to go to a yoga class at our local YMCA.
Okay.
And I didn't realize how weak I was until I took that class. Oh my gosh, my wrists ached for days from downward facing dog.
Was it an Ashtanga class or was it?
No.
Okay.
It was just a YMCA kind of like gym, lots of planks, lots of downward facing dogs.
Yeah. So it was more like a fitness.
Yeah.
But it was hard. It was hard.
It was totally hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't 60 chaturangas or?
No, not 60 chaturangas, but it was taught by my neighbor.
Okay.
And so she's my first yoga teacher.
Awesome.
I always attribute that to her. But I was like, I need to get fit. So I did like body pump and all these other things.
Yeah.
But I have really weird joints. And I developed terrible tendonitis in my elbow so bad I couldn't brush my hair.
Oh, man.
And they gave me cortisone shots and they didn't work. And I was like, I can't keep doing body pump. It's ruining me.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard on your body.
Yeah, so I was like scrolling social media and the practitioners that had the strength and the lines and the kind of thing I wanted to strive for were Ashtangis.
I'm
like, what is this? I bought a Kino DVD and I had to spend 2 months trying to figure out how to match my breathing with my movement in sun salutations.
Yeah.
It was so hard.
It is hard. I mean, it's still hard for me. I've been doing it for quite some time. It's like, that's like maybe the hardest part about like, you know, because also like a lot of body pump and working out and all of like the other areas, it's like the opposite movements it's opposite movements with opposite breath.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you're lifting up something heavy. And it's like we're exhaling and it's like, you know, everything that we're doing is like inhaling and lifting up. So it's just like totally different. Or, I mean, they're like, hold your breath.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Push harder.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, it was something. And then I did up through half primary with her DVD.
So, but in those early days, like when you were learning the sun salutations, do you feel like you know, because you went to body pump and then you did that yoga class and, you know, like you're kind of doing that stuff. But like, could you feel like the benefits of doing Ashtanga yoga instead of this other stuff?
I immediately had a connection with Ashtanga because I needed something to help bring me in and something that I can focus on step by step. Yoga, a vinyasa yoga system where you have to develop your own methods of practice each day. Like, what am I going to focus on today? Let's see. Let's do.
Yeah, it's impossible.
I'm by myself for the most part.
Yeah.
So this was a system that I could use at home to be able to put through step by step. And then when I got to Bhujapandasana, my friend at the time was like, you need a teacher. I'm like, I'm in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania.
I got Kino.
I got my DVD. Yeah. And she's like, you're not going to be able to do Bhuja without a teacher. And I'm like, maybe you're right.
I mean, you get to a spot and it's like, yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't do it on your own.
Yeah.
Like, it's really a place where you, I mean, even the practice now, which, you know, we'll talk about here shortly. I mean, you can't do it on your own. Like, you actually need support somehow to do it. But I mean, I'm interested in, like, you know, were you purely doing it for, like, the spiritual side of it?
No, I started for physical? Purely physical.
Physical.
And the teacher thing made me nervous because I knew about the chanting and I knew about all of those things. And that made me very, like, gave me some anxiety.
Why?
Because at home, I was in control of that. Like, I recognized the benefits of the practice, and I could be okay with what I was doing. I didn't have to step into another environment that I was unfamiliar with. And this might sound weird, but I was nervous about opening my heart and my spirit to something unfamiliar.
Yeah.
Because my faith is strong.
Yeah.
My whole life, you know, there were periods where I was like, what am I doing this for? I need to figure out my faith for myself.
Yeah.
But for most of the whole of my life has been built on this faith in Christ. And it's very strong.
Yeah.
And it's what I surround my entire life with. Many people that do Ashtanga, that's not their background and that's not their belief system. And that's okay with me. I have nothing wrong or anything against that.
Of course.
But I also don't want to put myself in a place that would jeopardize my faith.
Yeah. And you think that it would jeopardize your faith?
Well,
I mean, has your faith been tested?
No, it's been strengthened.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, so that was a fear.
It was an ungrounded fear because I didn't know.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting too, because like in the Yoga Sutras, like where most of the time, like people will say like, that's a religious text. You know, it's really not. And it basically says, like, you can pick the God of your own understanding. This is more like a scientific approach for you to connect to your higher power.
Yeah.
You know, which is like a very interesting, like, you know, because all of a sudden you start comprehending it. And I know that's not like, you know, that might not be what believers like actually, you know, feel like Christ is the one and only savior or whatever. But it definitely opens up yoga to like areas of the population that would be like, oh, yeah, you can't do that because you got to pick Ganesh.
I don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I know for me, I never thought that my yoga would ever become something spiritual when I started. It was purely physical.
Yeah. You're trying to get stronger.
Yeah. And that works. I mean, all the
chaturanga. And then you do chaturanga.
Yeah, it's good. And then once I got to dropping back and standing up, that's when the whole like bigger world of what yoga can do for oneself opened.
Yeah.
Because dropping back and standing up for me was the hardest thing I had ever done physically up until that point in my life.
I mean, you did it pretty fast though.
I don't do everything fast, but.
I mean like the duration of time from when like it was taught to you to like. You know, to like you actually completing it, like you did it.
It felt like an eternity of awful.
But why did it strengthen? Like, what did it open up? I don't understand.
Okay, so growing up the way I did, not that this was how it was supposed to be taught, but the way I took in all of my teachings and things in my Bible study classes and everything is I need to look a certain way. And it was mostly on the outside that we focused on how I look, how I'm perceived by others, how others, you know, I'm interacting with others. Am I leading them to understand that I have a good faith in Christ? All outside. No emotion.
Yeah.
And so once I started dropbacks and then, oh my gosh, when I got to second, my emotional body almost exploded. And I literally felt like a basket case because I had never come in touch with my emotions like that before, ever.
You were just like suppressing them or?
I mean, people would ask me, tell me an event in your life. I would tell them everything I did. And then they'd be like, how did you feel about that? I'm like, I don't know.
I did it.
Yeah. This is what happened.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's sort of like Midwestern philosophy, which I know like you're more like East Coast or whatever, but it's like, you just kind of like jam it aside and you continue to do your work. You know?
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's sort of like the same philosophy. And so you started learning second. I mean, was there a spiritual awakening or was there like an emotional moment that happened or several emotional months?
it was hard because I had second gone, and there were some things in my personal life, and there was an injury all coming together at the same time. And it made me feel like I was actually crazy. Like there was a time where I probably should have gone to a professional, because the amount of depression that I was feeling was almost like something I couldn't take off. It was like I had a weighted vest on all the time.
Yeah.
And so my husband saw it, and he's like, and so he sent me away for a week to study with a nun here.
Really?
Yeah, it was close to Philadelphia. It's called Cranley.
Wow.
That was last year, last February, as a matter of fact. And I studied with the nun, and she tried to like unravel some things with me, like through scripture and prayer. And that was kind of like a beginning of me starting to understand that feeling emotions and traveling through life and being okay, they can all occur simultaneously. When I was feeling the emotions without trying to process through them, I felt all over the place, like crazy.
Yeah.
But then once I was able to understand it's okay to feel, it's okay to cry. Oh, that was hard. Yeah. I don't like crying in front of other people too. So that was really difficult, because there would be times in my practice where I wanted to just let go. And there's still times where I feel like that. And I'm like, hold it together in front of other people. But I realized it's okay. It's okay to feel, and it's okay to process through those things. And Ashtanga yoga helped me with that. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it came into your life at the exact moment that you needed it.
For sure.
Yeah. And so like how deep, you know, like, or how much more purging has happened since that?
A lot.
Yeah. And you know, the crazy thing is too, is like my, like witnessing like what you have going on in your mat. Like, I mean, you didn't feel like some people I witnessed, like basically like coming in as like girls or like young boys, like you didn't come in like that, but you came in like scattered.
Oh my gosh, was I scattered?
And you're not like scattered anymore. Like, I mean, you're like, I'm focused, man, you know, like, you're like focused, you know, it's like, there's this moment where it's like, oh yeah, like, it's like everyone can benefit from this practice. I've seen it firsthand, like watching you, it's like, oh yeah, like. She's not like blah all over the place, you know, physically and spiritually. And I also feel like emotionally, like you're in a totally different place. It's like you're like the grown-up version of Kristen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not, no disrespect for the person that walked in. It's just like, yeah, it's worked. But it's also worked on like a deeper level than I feel like, you know, I mean, not to compare you to other people, but they're a deeper level than like what I usually see. You know, like you see the body change. You know, your body is like the exact same. Like you could do everything. You just needed to get a little stronger.
Yeah.
But like yours was like this emotional body, which is part of the reason why when you like first initially were like, hey, you know, if you ever want to do the Heartbreak Kids with me or whatever, I'd be totally open to it. Because it's like, you know, everyone gets so many different things. It's totally different to be like, oh yeah, I put my leg behind my head and like I'm good at it. But like to see someone's faith get stronger and see someone's like, you know, emotional body get stronger. I mean, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we see the physical stuff and like that kind of draws us in, but it's like a completely different, it's a completely different thing. I feel like with you, you could put your leg behind your head.
Yeah. My hips are weird. But, when I started purely physical and I was very much like, yes, I want the next posture. Yes. I want the next posture to where I am today.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm cool. Yeah. Like if we don't move anywhere else in this practice physically, I am fine.
Yeah.
I get to practice every day. Right? I want to make this practice sustainable for me.
Yeah.
So there have been some things that I've dealt with physically in the last couple of years where I'm like, I need to address this and figure out how to do this practice safely so that I'm able to continue to do it, because this has been so beneficial for me. Yeah. I don't ever want to, I mean, I'm sure at one point when I'm like 80, I don't know if I'll be still doing Kapitasana.
You're probably not going to be doing body either.
No. Yeah. So, but I want to continue for as long as I can. My faith is in Christ, not in this practice, but this practice has been an incredible tool to understand me.
Yeah.
And also deepen my faith at the same time.
Do you feel like Christ gave you this practice?
I don't know how I feel about that statement.
I mean, it's just like, you know, sometimes like our, you know, our higher powers give us thing that best serves us at
led me to
time.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Led me to it for sure.
Yeah. And tell me about the strengthening of faith. Like, what does that even mean?
So when I practice, it is connecting with myself. Yes. But it's also connecting to my higher power in a way that I don't necessarily do when I do devotions or when I sit in prayer. There's a statement people use called a moving meditation.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like my practice has come to. It's more of a moving meditation. I no longer have to, well, sometimes I have to think about what pose is next because I still am a little scattered, not as much as I was, but I don't have to think about what comes next. And it's almost like this, I've said it before, physically, I feel like my ears to a safe and I'm turning that little like dial. Okay, what are we unlocking today?
Yeah.
But it's also you're breathing deeply. My focus is, okay, God, what do you have for me today? My most poignant, powerful, and incredible moments with God, feeling presence, feeling His love, feeling and just ready for the day, has happened during my practice or after.
Yeah.
Lately. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I too feel like sort of the presence of God, like most of the time, like in my practice when I get done, I'm like, oh yeah. Like, I mean, you know, and you could even say like the second class that I did, it was really like, I felt the presence of God and it was like, oh yeah, I'm actually supposed to be doing this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, cause I was so resistant to it or whatever. I mean, I was, so it's yeah. like, I don't want to do this stuff. Like yeah. this stuff's for girls, like not interested in it, you know?
It's right.
Like, and so, and all right. So tell me a little bit about like, your teaching and stuff, like what you're doing with that.
Yeah. So that's what actually brought me to do something called holy yoga
okay.
training, back in 2000.
This is like a Christian
yes.
Yoga.
A way for me to get certified, under a branch or an umbrella that has the same beliefs as I do.
Sure.
Because
I mean, that probably felt safe.
It felt safe. Yeah. I've told you I was nervous about stuff before. At this point, though, now that was back in 2015.
Okay.
Now I probably could take a teacher training anyway, where yeah. it'd be fine. But yeah. at that time, I'm like, I think I want to link myself with something that has the same beliefs and
yeah.
I feel okay. And it's been good because what has it helped me do, having this holy yoga certification, there are a lot of other Christians that still have a lot of trepidation when it comes yeah. to yoga. They feel like, oh, you know, they're worshiping something. I'm
something
like,
else,
stop.
Right.
Yeah. But, it's allowed me the opportunity to share that yoga can be used for much more than what they think.
Yeah.
And I get to have discussions with people and they'll take my class. They're like, oh my gosh, that yeah. was amazing.
It doesn't really replace your belief system.
No.
No. If anything, it's strengthened mine.
Yes.
You know, like, and I think it strengthens a lot of people, but I don't think it necessarily gives people a new thing. It just is like, it increases the bandwidth for the thing that you already have.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But it's given me an opportunity to let people know that it is okay to practice yoga and be a Christian.
Yeah. I mean, and also the community, there's, you know, there's so much resistance like to it. I mean, I teach a lot kind of in what we would call maybe like the Bible Belt, you know, and like there's been places where we don't chant or people don't chant. They don't like, you know, they don't want to hear about like how this pose is like dedicated to Shiva or something like that. I mean, I get it. Like, I don't really care. It's like, but I'm not like a person who's trying to evangelize, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Which is like a completely different mindset. It's like, I'm not trying to make you a believer of yoga.
It's right.
Like, and it's also not, I mean, it's not a thing unless you like want to do it. You know, it's like, you can't make someone.
Yeah. People are like, what do you say to someone that has a lot of like, you know, fear about it or is like not wanting me to do it? I'm like, I don't defend it.
Yeah.
Come to a class. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. Like, I don't want to fight with you.
I mean, someone asked me one time and it wasn't you, it was someone else. They were like, is it okay if I don't chant? Like, I'm a Christian. Like, I don't chant. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't chant.
Like, you can say the yeah. Lord's Prayer.
I do,
you can
actually.
Say whatever you want.
Or song lyrics for a song, yeah.
I don't even really, I don't care. Like, I would ask that you were present for that moment.
Yeah, like, I take samasti to heal like yeah, everybody else.
And but it's like, no, it's like, and there's people in Mysore, India that I know for a fact that have been there, that it's not about, you know, connection to something else. It's more about the connection to, like, you know, them. And they don't chant in Mysore, you know, like India, which is... Obviously, you know, India's Hindu.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and so it's very interesting to like have that. It's like, oh yeah, you don't have to chant if you don't want to.
No, like so. I don't even say om. Like, I don't have any problem with anybody else saying it. Yeah. Even people that say they're Christians that say om, I don't have any problem with that. But me personally, I just haven't chanted and I haven't said om.
Yeah.
I say my own prayer and
sure. It's... So tell me what else about like your teaching. So you were at this holy yoga.
I did holy yoga. I did the 225 and also did the 500 hour and I taught locally. And then more than a year ago, almost a year and a half ago, I did Trini Foundation training.
Yeah.
And I started teaching at some treatment centers locally to me.
Awesome.
And I tried to teach a group of women, and that didn't work out very well.
I heard about that.
Yeah, they actually had the person that was directing their events and things, there was some things going on with her.
Got it.
So I could not, it was hard to come in because they were having a hard time with the person that was bringing me there.
Yeah.
So it was difficult. And then last year, a director of the only inpatient teen rehabilitation center in the state of Maryland contacted me.
Oh, wow.
It's like 10 minutes from my house.
That's awesome.
And he's like, can you please come? I'm like, probably. Let me contact Jess. So I've been teaching there for a year.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Do you get stuff out of it?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I message you on good days and then I message you on that really bad day. But they're a trip, man. Like, there's some of the guys that come in there and they're all about it. They're like, I'm going to learn everything. Teach me everything.
Yeah.
Give me the chart. Is there a training foundation? Oh, my gosh.
There is also like people that don't want anything to do with
it. Oh, my back. Oh, my this. Oh, I can't do that. Or I'm just like, yes.
What do you tell those people?
Oh, so we go over. Okay. So what hurts? And then I tell them what they should do. And then we like modify things. And so, you know, it's excuses.
Yeah.
It's excuses. And to persevere is something that a lot of them are unfamiliar with. So we talk a lot at the beginning, at the end of class, of my expectations. And then at the end, how did that feel? What's going on with you? How did you process class today? And for the most part, they get why I'm there.
Yeah.
They're going to fight me, you know. They're going to fight me.
Yeah. I mean, their disease is currently winning if they're in treatment center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're there for like 4 to 6 months, 8 months long if they're not on good behavior.
4 to 6 months?
Yeah. So yeah, I get to see them for a while.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's intense. How many people are in the class?
There's only, well, when I first started, I had two classes, but now it's just one.
Okay.
And there's usually between 5 and 10. I used to have girls, and now I only have guys.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And do you feel like the girls were picking it up better, or the guys have been picking it up better, or what?
No, the girls were harder to teach. Maybe I just have a thing with females. I don't know. I had a hard time teaching them because they had this idea in their head of what they wanted to look like, and I would tell them over and over again, you do not need to be Instagram worthy to be in this class. Like, that's not what we're doing.
I mean, plus you're in a treatment center.
Like, I mean...
like. You're not going to put this on Instagram. Like, you're in a treatment center currently. Like, you probably need to get your life in order, and then you can start an Instagram account.
Right.
And get your 100,000 followers later.
Yeah, we'll deal with that later. But, yeah, they just would have this idea in their head of what they should do, and they couldn't do it, and it frustrated them. And so then they'd get sassy, and they'd be, like, half doing things. And I'm like, you realize the half effort that you're putting forth is harder than just even trying. Like, you do know that, right? So they're just...
I totally get it. And honestly, like, collectively, you know, we got about 25 teachers, maybe a little bit more than that or whatever, at the Trinity Foundation, and I think that most of the female classes are the most difficult ones.
I would
agree. The guys are like somewhat open to it, and maybe because like an exercise more of an exercise background or something, I really don't know, but or maybe the guys are beat more into like sensibility or something like that, where they're like, all right, I'm willing to try whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty crazy. But I think most of the teachers would say like the female classes are hardest to teach.
I would fall in that category and agree.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so what else are you going to do with your teaching?
Well, right now I've kind of pulled back on most of my teaching because my kids are in an era of life where I need to be available to them. So unless
I'm driving them around all the time.
Oh my gosh. Evenings are crazy. So unless I can teach during the day, it's so I have like a private student and I've got the Trini Foundation class.
Right.
And when Micah starts kindergarten in the fall, I'll probably teach at the Y. I teach at my local Y. I was there for a while teaching 7 classes a week.
That's nuts.
It was nuts. Looking back on it, I have no idea how I did it. And then every once in a while, I've got like a couple of Ashtanga friends that want to practice with me. So there's this one girl that practiced with me one day, and then I've got somebody coming on Monday, which is great because now, you know, my good friend moved to Columbus and I can't practice with her anymore. So hopefully we'll get some things going. My hope is to one day possibly start something Mysore-ish in my area.
Yeah, I hear you. So, you know, tell me what it means for you to continue to practice. Like, you know, what's the big why you continue to do it? Like, is it all like altruism? Like, is it like helping someone else or is it about like still helping yourself? Like, what's your big why of why you continue to do this or show up on your mat?
It's a form of self-love. actually put something on my story the other day, and it was like an unpopular opinion that self-love is more about discipline and perseverance and taking the time to understand what needs to happen within yourself to be a better person.
Yeah.
Than bubble baths and trips to the country alone.
Everyone thinks self-care is bath bombs nowadays. It's
no.
Like such a luxury, and it's like, no.
I like a bath bomb. Yeah. Actually, I don't really like baths. No, I'm lying. But yeah, I like doing things like that, but this practice is probably one of the best forms of self-love. And it has helped me so much so that my husband and my kids recognize when I haven't practiced. And my husband will ask me, have you practiced? Maybe you should go practice.
Awesome.
I've got the kids. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, that's how you know that you got support.
Yes, I definitely have support.
Pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. Like a fascinating conversation. You know, it's most of the time, we're talking about addiction, all this stuff, but like it's done a totally different thing for you. And it's really awesome to kind of have a breath of, difference that comes into, the Heartbreak Kid. So it's pretty awesome to have you on here. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.